When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, my talkers, new week, more fun with Lori and Julia, and let's get it off and have a little fun here with our weekend claim to fame.
Hey, Grant.
Hi, Grant.
Hey, guys.
Well, Julia and I have the exact same weekend claim to fame.
Family, party, family.
Yeah, hey, family, party, family, and yes, my darling husband, Casey, who I forgot to thank when I got up to ignite, but I was so nervous. Anyway, he hired a band, this really great band, Kalea and Blackwater.
Yes.
To play for, I turned 39 again, or 38 again, or 50. I can't decide.
You did have a birthday.
I did have a birthday.
And you had it again.
I had it again. And we were at Schuller's Tavern.
What a fun bar.
It's a fun bar, but that band is fantastic.
They were amazing.
And people were dancing. It was just a blast. And thank you, Grant.
Family and from out of town.
It was, just so many friends from different walks of life and the family and just dancing and the neighbors. I told my neighbor ladies, I said, thank goodness you gals came and got the part
because
they all got
the dancing started.
They got the dancing mm-hmm. really going. And but wasn't that band fun?
Mm.
Amazing. Kalea and Blackwater.
Yes.
She can sing anything.
Yes. And Corey could play anything.
Yep. And the drummer. I mean, it was just fun, Grant. It was so rowdy.
I bet.
It was so, so rowdy. At one point towards the end of the night, the 24-year-old kid who was celebrating his birthday with a group of friends, he was like, he finally understood that there's not usually a band there, that somebody had hired them and we were doing a conga line to some song.
Lori, you were in your element.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun dancing, but he just was like, oh my God, this is the best birthday, but it was a riot. And that place has good tavern food. Because some of my friends came early and their pizza is amazing.
The pizza's amazing there. It's really good pizza.
So, anyway, Schuller's, it's just kind of hidden away. I had another birthday party there once with the Flamin' O's. I recommend, if you have
That's just such a great inclination
to spend a little money.
Yeah, and you don't have to rent out the bar. You just provide a band for the bar.
Yeah, and then we had to give the, Phil, who owns Schuller's, I had to give him on Thursday night, I'd give him some kind of an estimate of how many tables they should save for the party.
Mm-hmm.
But it was super fun. I did have to go nap in my car.
Oh, you did?
I sent my kids. Because Friday night I went hard. And Saturday just...
Because we had a family party, which was really the first party we've had in our backyard since we put up the twinkle lights and post-COVID and everything. Not that we're really post-COVID, but just where we all gathered. And it looked so festive back there.
It was just fun. But then I just was tired. I had got up late, early tennis Saturday morning, and then all day Saturday. I had to take allergy pills for the last 2 days with
the
smoke.
Because of the
smoke? Mm-hmm. Yeah, my head was just killing me. So I texted my kids, I'm in the car taking a nap, and I'm fine. Because I just wanted to sleep for about 20 minutes. Yeah. My car's not comfortable.
Yeah.
The back seat sleeping over the hump in the middle was not comfortable. But one of my kids is like, to my other sister is there, and she goes, Catherine, go find out if mom's okay. Why is she taking a nap? And Kevin's like, she's fine.
She's fine.
Don't worry about it.
No,
she's
it
good.
Was just, it was
sleep
really.
And, rally.
And Lori, there's a video of Lori leading the dance with the kids.
Nice.
And you just couldn't have looked happier. I'm going to post a cute picture of you and Casey today because he has shrunk.
Julia, don't say that about Casey in a mean way.
But you guys are so cute. He had on his hat and his dark shirt with the thing down the middle, and you had on your black jumpsuit. You guys look so cute together.
Well, and we do know how to dance. Well.
And you do know how to dance. They do know how to dance and just look so happy. You looked so happy, Lori. It was so fun.
Yeah, it was just a blast. Nice. I recommend having a birthday party for yourself and hiring a band if you can.
Seriously. They were good.
Yeah. How about you? Did you have a weekend?
I want to say goodbye to two of our friends, Travis and Katrina. They're moving this week to Texas, so we threw them a party the same day as yours. I was going to try to balance both, but I had a little too much fun at mine.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just don't know if I should show up as hammered as I am right now. Yeah. So I didn't make it over. Unfortunately, I wish I could have been there for you. Sounds like a blast. But Sunday, then, we went out for Grandma Badisher, Lily, my girlfriend's 91st birthday. We went down to Canterbury.
Your girlfriend's 91st birthday?
No, my girlfriend's grandma's 91st. Yeah,
Grant, you're really dating a cougar.
I definitely, I said that a little fast. No, it was Grandma Badisher's 91st, and we went out to, she's a big horse race fan. She reads all the handicaps in the newspaper all the time. So, and they had the corgi races, which Matt had talked about. Yeah. So that was kind of fun. We won a little bit of money and spent some time with her. And
it was
a good weekend. Yeah. So.
Were the corgi races just funny to
watch? Oh, they're adorable. There was at one point in time, there was these two corgis that were leading, and the other one just takes a left and takes the other one out, and then cuts across. And Paul Allen, you guys know the voice of it. He's narrating great. The whole thing, and just it was fun. I mean, it was a nice break from the regular races, but a lot of kids. Oh my gosh, it was full of kids for the corgi races.
Fun.
So yeah, it was cool.
Is that all that they race for corgis?
For dogs, yes. For dogs. But sometimes they have like llama and they do ostrich. They do like other animal races.
Peter must not like that.
No, I guess not.
No, we better not.
You know what I'm saying?
But ostriches are funny. Hysterical.
Yeah, it's cool.
Hysterical. That would be so funny. Remember going to the dog races in Hudson back in the day? Or we'd go to them in Florida.
I went to Florida, the dog races in Florida as a kid. Yes.
Same. They're funny. They're funny to watch. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Lori's my... Did you get it off? Nope.
Why does Bradley leave this on every day?
There we
go.
The speaker's off.
Okay. Got it.
Bradley leaves it on for me every day just to see if I'm paying attention. And no, I'm not, actually.
No, you really aren't.
That's what we can report from that.
You small really echo. Aren't. Sound great now. You sound great now.
Yeah. Oh, and we had to say goodbye to the...
The baby.
We've had the little grand baby boy with us for a whole week, and he had to go back to his house in Chicago. And
what did you call him?
Velvet baby thighs.
Do you miss those already?
Oh, Casey,
you guys are going to go through withdrawals.
He said to me, he goes, I feel like crying.
Oh.
You're going to go through withdrawals.
I miss him. Yeah, I know. Well, don't let your kids grow up and move away.
Isn't that, my thing always would be go away to college or school or whatever, go away, but come back home.
Yep. Yeah. That's what I did.
You know, go away, come back home.
Get it out of your system. Go have some fun, learn a little bit, and then come back to where it all matters.
Home. Yeah, I don't know how my mom did it, like moving overseas for 3 years, 4 years, and that would be you wouldn't see the grandparents. I mean, I think about that.
Your grandparents wouldn't see you for years.
Yeah.
That would be horrible.
Yeah. And of course, back then, you know,
it wasn't so easy to travel and go visit.
Well, it wasn't. And then also long distance phone calls were like tremendously
Remember
expensive.
How expensive you'd call on Sundays? Don't you? Sundays like after 5.
When did that change? Was it with cell phones that finally or some point
know,
or unlimited long distance? When did that happen? In the 90s?
I have no idea. But I remember because Dad moved to Florida a long time ago, and we would call him on Sundays after 5.
Yeah.
Or collect.
Or collect.
2006, prices have gotten so low that the Federal Communications stopped tracking the cost of long-distance phone calls in 2006. So, when cell phones got to their peak, it was probably around 2000. Everybody had one by 2006.
Right.
So they stopped tracking costs for long-distance calls in 2006.
2006. All right. Well, that makes, then you know, probably a lot of people did that for a long time, you know, doing the...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a big deal. Sundays or after 5, you could call or something. Remember, the circuits would be busy. I mean, it was just like a big... It seems so archaic when you think about it now.
Yeah, it really
is. It seems like a very, very long time ago.
It really does. Mm-hmm. All right, listen. It's Monday. That's
wait a minute,
all we
wait
can
a minute.
Say.
Are you sure?
It's
check
just Monday. I'm not going to say it's a happy Monday, a fun Monday. It's just Monday.
They come every week.
That's right.
Every 7 days like clockwork.
I'm glad it wasn't yesterday because, man, were we moving slow.
Me too.
Were you guys?
Oh, yes.
Well, I didn't sit down once the whole night, and we got there at like 6, and I was just a little social butterfly dancing person, and I might.
It was six to midnight. Was that was a tired. Long open house because I was thinking because when we you schedule your open houses and stuff, you know, you want it 2 hours, knowing it'll take an hour to get rid of people, mm-hmm. so it's a 3 hour. Your open house was for
the band played
started seven to midnight.
That's that's like what you want, Joel.
That was a long open house, is what I'm calling it.
You don't care. You weren't there at seven. I didn't see you there till eight.
7:10. I was there.
All right,
sleeping in her car.
All right, when we come back, it's our story we can't get enough of.
Thanks, Grant. Thank you. It's a new month. It's a new day.
That's right. August 2nd. Donnie Love showed up to our party on Saturday night.
Yes, he did.
And it was his birthday yesterday.
I know.
Okay, so Donald. Reese Witherspoon, the rumor, I guess, was true. She sold her entertainment startup company that she started in 2016, Hello Sunshine. She wasn't the sole owner. No. She had it.
Her husband was a partner with her.
AT&T and all kinds. But anyway, she sold it for $900 million to a firm backed by private equity giant Blackstone Group. And, of course, Hello Sunshine, some of the shows that she produced. And Reese started in 2016. And she started it to change the way women are seen in media. And she, her first thing she did was Wild.
Yes.
Based on the Cheryl Strayed book.
Minnesota gal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And other things that she did, then Big Little Lies, Apple's The Morning Show. Of course, Gone Girl was also produced by Hello Sunshine. And so Reese and the Hello Sunshine CEO will join the board of this new company, continue to operate the business. According to the Wall Street Journal, which first reported the sale, Blackstone is spending $500 million in cash to purchase shares from existing investors. And then they're going to roll over the remaining equity into ownership stakes in the new company Blackstone is forming. And the thing is that the demand for streaming, it's at an all-time high, and media deals are hot. So that is like amazing for Reese. Really amazing.
It's really amazing. And you know, and this is a trend. We've seen so many other women actors that we've known have started their own production companies because Nicole Kidman. We've got Kelly Cuoco. You've got, there's just so many of them that have done this. Reese was kind of on the cutting edge, but she hit home runs right away. She hit home runs. So she not only bought the book rights, she produced the movie and she starred in it.
Yeah.
So Wild was such a success and it was such a great story about Cheryl Strayed.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that they are working on right now, Lori, that I just want to die for is Where the Crawdads Sing. So they have the rights to that, the movie rights to that, which that book has been on the New York Times bestseller for like 7 years.
It hasn't been seven years. And it's finally dropped off.
It's
like 3 years. 3 years.
More than I think, but okay. Mm. But so anyway, it's a big darn deal.
Yeah. Huge deal. I mean, she's got to be very happy about it.
$900 million. Mm-hmm. And her husband and her are two of the four people involved.
Yeah.
That's a big chunk of money.
Yeah.
So cheers to Reese Witherspoon.
Cheers, Reese. And I'm so glad now. Now I feel not so bad that you never respond to me and my book club suggestions that I've tweeted you on and off over the last couple of years. I've been your eyes and ears on the ground. Julia,
you're talking
to
Reese Witherspoon right now, not me. Okay, I'm just curious who we're talking to.
No, when I was tweeting Reese, and only the last two books that I remember to tweet Hello Sunshine, but I'm not going to feel bad about the lack of, you know, getting back to me.
She's been busy, Lori.
She's been busy.
She's got a major company.
To run, but I just thought I could, you know, could help her, but now I feel like,
I don't know that she needs our help.
Yeah, you know what, Julia? You can't read everything. I just read this book, The Birthday Club. Agents, do you know how much they have to read to be able to find stuff for their clients?
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying.
The birthday club's coming at the end of the month.
Just trying to help.
Lori, I love it. You're a giver. Always a giver. Okay. Always.
Bill and Melinda Gates are done. They are officially divorced.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. TMZ got the divorce documents. You know what's interesting about TMZ? They haven't reported one word on the judge getting thrown out of Brad and Angelina's.
Do you think he likes Brad Pitt?
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. Warner Brothers owns TMZ, but I mean, they are always the one who always has...
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Anything legal? I mean, they sure went to, had a lot of stories about Brad getting the temporary joint custody. Yeah, they had a million and then it was crickets.
Yeah.
So obvious. But anyway, TMZ got a hold of the divorce documents. Melinda is not changing her last name. Neither one of them gets spousal support and everything.
I don't like this sentence though. Okay. So they've been married for 27 years and there was no prenup. Right. Okay. And his estimated worth is $130 billion. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's the next sentence. Melinda has been cashing in on the split for months. Remember, Bill lined her pockets with nearly $2 billion in stocks the day she filed for divorce stocks.
So sexist.
I know. And the following day, he hooked her up with 25 million shares of Mexican Coca-Cola. This is like the most sexist thing.
It is.
These are joint assets.
Yeah.
I just read that and thought, wow.
Just saying, TMZ is sexist with their coverage on how they write about stuff. And it was sexist also that they didn't give Angelina, that she won a victory getting that judge taken out. I mean, TMZ is owned by Warner Brothers Studio. So it just feels like the whole way that they wrote this, like, well,
this
she's
is so
not
bad.
Deserving of it.
Of the money. Mm-hmm. It's so bad. That just bothered me. Mm. And then, you know,
remember when the family went to the private island mm-hmm. when the news broke and everyone but him? But, I mean, you know, apparently these NDAs and the things that he was hitting on, he was he was that guy that no one thought was a wolf, and he was a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, it's just so shocking.
Yeah, so they're divorced, and there's a separation contract, and basically, I don't know. I think she probably got about $65 billion.
Yeah, well, she should get half. She should get half. That's part of the deal. But I just thought I haven't read anything that sexist in a little while. Come on,
yeah.
Come on, people.
Okay, Bennifer is not married, but they are still in, in the south of Italy. They're in Italy now. I think they were floating around Naples on the Valerie.
Is that what they were doing?
Yeah, no one got married. That was the wild, wild
rumor. I didn't
hear
that.
I think the wild rumor that's true is they're recreating Jenny from the Block scene by scene. He's wearing the watch from that video. She's wearing, I mean, that could be the credible thing.
That's just kind of funny that they're doing that, though.
She's wearing the Ben necklace.
Well, did she wear that in the video?
No, she didn't. But I think that is, and Ben is gone. He's left her.
I thought so, because she had lunch with other people. That he wasn't there.
Yeah. Mark Anthony has the kids for like probably 2 weeks.
I'm telling you what. Those were fun pictures to look at.
Weren't they?
So appreciated them going to the south of France and giving us all those
pictures.
By
the way, if you're wondering how much the Valerie, $130 million yacht, what that cost to rent a week?
Tell me.
$1.1 million for a week.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Can you imagine?
No.
That's FU money.
That is.
That's true
what?
FU
that
money.
That is. And before leaving for the U.S., Ben joined Jen at a restaurant in, I think, Naples, because that's where mm-hmm. he would have flown out of. But they were all over each other, lots of PDA. And this has been a real good birthday. And his birthday is coming up. These Leos.
They're the cutest. I love their pictures.
I know.
Mean, like, this makes you want.
I know. And then she's wearing a bracelet in the yellow bikini, if you saw her this week, a bracelet that he bought her in 2002. So
she kept all the jewelry.
Who has the pink ring?
Wait till that comes out.
Then you know it's happening.
I love it.
All right, stay tuned. Kristen Harwell, the New York Times bestselling author, is joining us next. Having a second visit with the Lori and Julia Book Club author. We got to talk to Kristen about 2 months ago, Kristen Harmel, excuse me, and we talked to her about the Book of Lost Names, and now we're talking to her about another amazing book she's written, The Forest of Vanishing Stars. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi, it's so good to hear your voices again.
Oh, my gosh.
Another home run from you.
Oh, geez, Louise.
Oh, you.
So, Kristen, give us the setup of The Forest of Vanishing Stars, and then we want to ask you how you found out about this amazing true story, which this is a fictionalized version of it, but it's pretty incredible story. So let's start with the setup of the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is about a young woman who was kidnapped from her German parents on her second birthday by this woman named Yerusha, who feels like she's been called by the forest itself to take this girl, to raise her deep in the woods, and to give her just a different life. So she raises her with all the survival skills she'll need, but basically no skills of human contact because she raises her in almost complete isolation. So then the woman dies in 1942, and Yona, the main character, is kind of walking around the forest alone when suddenly her path crosses with that of a family of fleeing Jewish refugees. And for the first time, she learns what's happening in the villages outside of the safety of her woods. So she learns that Jews are being rounded up, put into ghettos, and being murdered by the Nazis. We're right in the midst of World War II. So she has this decision. Does she stick to the safety of her forest like she's always been taught? Or does she step out of that safety zone and help and do what she can to save these people? And so, of course, she chooses the latter, or it would be a very short book.
Right.
I'd probably not be on your show talking to you. But it becomes this story of coming of age, a story of identity. And ultimately, at its heart, it is about the, or it's based on the real life stories of Jewish refugees in Eastern Europe who really did survive in the forests that way for years during the Second World War and walked out of the woods alive at the end of the war. I mean, the true stories behind this are just absolutely incredible.
So how did you find out about the story of people that had
lived in the forest?
Yeah, lived in the forest. I mean, was it when you were doing, your research on the Book of Lost Names or another one of your books?
It's a great question. So I've written several novels set in World War II France. And this is set in World War II Poland, actually in an area of Poland that is now Belarus, just because of shifting national borders. So no, it was actually not during research for my other books, but it's something that I kept hearing mentions of here and there, just because it's such an extraordinary story. And people reference it just in passing when you're talking about heroic stories of survival. And I remembered seeing a movie called Defiance that came out in 2008. I think I saw it around 2009. It stars Daniel Craig as a man named Tuvia Bielski, who, along with his brothers, led a group of refugees into the forest. And that group grew to more than 1,200 people who hid in the forest and survived that way. So, I think when I kept hearing this mentioned again, or just hearing little references here and there to people who survived in the woods, I remembered that story and began looking back into it. And the story that unfolded through the research was so much more in-depth and so much more incredible even than that movie, which was an astounding, beautiful movie. I would highly recommend it. But, you can only tackle so much in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And then, I dove into a year's worth of research on this. It's just fascinating. And in fact, one of the interesting things I get to do as part of this research was to speak to the youngest Bielski brother. So the movie is about the Bielski brothers. and the group they formed. The youngest brother, Aaron, was 14 when he fled into the woods in 1941. He's still alive. He lives in Florida, just a few hours away from where I live.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's 94 now, and we had a chance to talk last summer, which was such an honor and such a privilege.
If you're just joining us, let's just give the book a plug. We're talking with Kristen Harmel. The book is The Forest of Vanishing Stars. The cover is gorgeous, by the way. And we were talking about the story of the Bielski brothers, and that you just how cool that you got to sit down with this 94-year-old man and talk about his experiences.
What an opportunity! And you know, these opportunities aren't going to be in front of us much longer.
Right.
We're really, you know, we're losing the generation of people who were old enough to remember what happened during that war. But his experiences were so moving, and the way he framed it and what he felt he had learned from it, just having that discussion with him was so tremendously powerful. And I think it really became part of the heartbeat of this book. Like, the story is not about the Bielski brothers. The story is not about Aaron Bielski. It's a completely fictional story where the real life survivors are based very heavily on the way those people survived. But just to talk to someone who'd been through that and who walked out of the forest forever changed based on that experience was really profound for me.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering if, like, because in Yona, when she, you know, she knows how to survive off the land. Mm-hmm. She knows how to defend herself, but she knows nothing about, you know, humans or whatever. But when she meets this group of Jewish refugees fleeing the Nazis, and then when they have to, at one point, they have to go in deep into the forest and go into an area where she knows where there's a swamp.
Right.
And you're writing it, you know, you really have all this good wilderness stuff. And I'm just, it was so vivid. I'm wondering, is that from Mr. Bielski?
No, that is a great question. The wilderness stuff came from a few sources. So I did a ton of reading before I started writing the book, just a ton of reading about everything I could get my hands on about the specific forest where this book is set, as well as survivor recollections. And, you know, again, there were 1,200 people that walked out as part of this Bielski group. There were other smaller groups in the forest, too. And a lot of them have either written their own memoirs or have been interviewed and, you know, have kind of given their recollections.
Yeah.
But even after reading through all of that, I felt like I didn't totally have a handle on the forest, which really had to become a character.
Because
the forest, you know, sustained them and sheltered them and betrayed them and protected them. And, you know, the forest was a character. So I ended up connecting with this man named Vadim Sidorovich, who is an ecotourism guide he has a PhD, and he leads guided tours in English into the forest. He lives in the forest. And I contacted him and told him what I was writing about and that I needed some help. And he basically offered to become my research right arm in Belarus. So I would send him, I paid him by the hour, and I would send him like 20 questions at a time, and they would be things about the herbs and the flowers and the trees and the plants and, you know, how the survivors made stoves underground and how they would find shelter if they hadn't built their shelter yet and it started to rain, or how they would escape somebody quickly if they needed to blend in. I mean, there were a million questions, and he answered every single one in enormous detail. And I think that made the difference between the forest simply being a backdrop and the forest, I hope, coming alive as a character, because he brought it alive for me.
You really did. And, you know, and in your author's note at the end of the book, and the story is just, you know, it is good, even though, you know, it is heartbreaking at the same time, because you write in your author's notes, think about this for a minute. Approximately 3 million Jewish people were murdered in a single country, Poland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's really, it far outweighed any other country.
Yes. Yeah. So the chances of survival of these people who escaped into the woods were so low. I mean, that's what makes it so extraordinary that against all of those odds, against the odds of the Germans hunting them, against the odds of, you know, the farmers on the edges of the forest hunting them, you know, for rewards, and against the odds of surviving the actual forest itself.
Yes.
You know, these bitter cold winters, this inhospitable wilderness, and to think that they made it through, it's almost mind-boggling.
Yeah, it really is.
Kristen, you're such a lovely, amazing writer. The book is The Forest of Vanishing Stars. I want to give a plug because every Wednesday night you have Friends in Fiction. There's a Facebook page and you do a Facebook Live interviewing other authors at 6 o'clock Central Time here. And you do it with other authors that we love, Patty Callahan, Mary Kay Andrews, Mary Alice, can't think of her last name.
Mary Alice Monroe and Christy Woodson Harvey.
Everyone has three names. Everyone has three names, except for you.
Except me. I'm the oddball. I don't know how they let me join.
I know.
I don't even belong there.
I like that you just have two, but we have to ask you, the book is so delicious. Has anybody optioned it? For like a limited series or for a movie?
Oh, gosh. I mean, from your lips, right? I hope that happens soon. We're actually working on my previous book, The Book of Lost Names, and then hopefully we'll be taking this one out soon. So if any of your listeners would like to option the book.
We are always reaching out to Reese Witherspoon, and she sold her company today for a lot of money.
I assume, exactly, and I assume she's probably listening. So Reese, if you'd just like to give me a call.
We'll tell her.
Okay. I feel like I tweeted her for the Book of Lost Names.
You're just such a lovely writer. It's such a treat to have you twice, like in a month. You got to tell us the last great book you've read.
Patty Callahan's Once Upon a Wardrobe, which comes out in October, and it is about the true story behind C.S. Lewis coming up with Narnia, coming up with the world of Narnia. So it's just a beautiful, it's so good. Once Upon a Wardrobe.
She wrote Savannah, which we just loved. Thank you for giving us a heads up, and we'll get in touch with her publicist.
Perfect.
Oh, gosh, we love.
She's fantastic. Oh, good.
Nice to chat with you, honey.
And Kristen, we assume you're just always working on your next book. You're always writing.
I am. Yeah, I have one coming out, I think, next summer. It's tentatively scheduled for next summer. Okay. And it's a return to World War II France. So back to what I'm known for, World War II France.
Well,
You're so good. We love talking to you. Love reading your books, The Forest of Vanishing Stars. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me. So nice to talk to you two again.
Absolutely. Have a good day.
It's impossible to not know what's going to happen
pretty much.
In the evening because they announce it on everything. So there's we won't say what was spoiled for us this morning in case it wasn't for you. But Simone Biles is competing tomorrow night. She's going to compete in the balance beam. And she's ready to go and has committed to it. So that will be her one event. So that's pretty exciting.
And awesome. In the qualifiers, just to let people know, during the qualifiers for the Olympics, she was 7th overall on the beam. And Suni Lee, who is going to be competing on the beam, St. Paul's, was 3rd overall.
Yeah.
So just for people,
not even her best thing, if you can say that.
But you can see how she wouldn't get the crazy twisties on this apparatus like she does flying in the air through the vault. Or through the uneven parallel bars and
although
spinning.
They do somersaults and they flip a little bit, but not major.
Yeah.
Like a floor exercise or the vault, Lori.
And maybe she just needed that couple weeks to get herself.
Plasma chair.
Get that.
She's flipping on the balance beam. She does.
I understand.
Goes back and back and then back. She does like three in a row. So
it's not the vertical height.
Is it going up?
It's not the vertical height, is what I'm trying to get
at. Got it. Mm hmm. Not going up in the air and spinning. So she must have practiced and felt good about it.
Yeah.
Is beach volleyball on every second of the day?
Right?
Lori said that. Well,
my God.
I watched it this morning. It was on this morning, too, and last night.
It's on every second. I swear to God.
Okay. And it isn't that much fun to watch.
No.
Not really.
Because here's what I've decided I couldn't stand watching. 3-on-3 basketball.
Oh, the worst. That was horrible.
I did watch a little bit today of the horse riding, jumping over the
equestrian.
Yeah, the equestrian stuff. I did. Now, here was something that I was kind of excited to watch today was they don't call it synchronized swimming anymore. It's called artistic swimming.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And they've changed the name. It started today. And they've changed the name because it was formerly synchronized swimming, but it combines element of gymnastics and ballet in the water, and there's more of choreography in place, blah, blah, blah. They just changed the name,
mm-hmm.
which is stupid, I thought. But there was a study that came out in 2019 about how many synchronized swimmers, we'll just call them that, because people know what we're talking about,
yep.
get concussions. Like one in four of them, because they're underwater and they're trying to do all these things. And I don't know if you've ever tried to put your legs up while your body's underwater and hold yourself under. Yes. Your arms are flailing. You're trying to keep everything. So you can imagine them hitting. So they invented a swimming cap.
Oh, is that where they wear the sort of soft
cap? Yeah. It looks like headgear for wrestlers a little bit. I've seen
so
that.
They invented that in like 2018. They started wearing that because concussions was such
a
problem.
The water polo guys wear them too.
So I just looked into a little bit about this artistic swimming and the changes, and then the whole helmet thing came up because they are so close together when they're trying to put all their feet up in the air. They all kick each other underwater, you know, so a lot of that's going on.
I have to say that Rowdy Gaines is like an unbelievable swimming announcer. He's so hilarious.
Was that the guy that was going nuts when during the men's 1500?
Well, it's Dan Hicks and Rowdy Gaines, and Rowdy Gaines is the blonder looking
Yes, he had the pink shirt on.
They're the best announcing pair, and I think Natalie Lukin or Natasha Lukin.
I think she's very good, too.
They're both very good, but they are, this Rowdy and Dan are great. That Caleb Dressel, I don't know that I've ever been in love with triceps before. And
he's beautiful.
What do you call right here this muscle along the neck?
Trap. I think it's your trap.
I've never been in love with traps before, Caleb Dressel.
It's the triangle neck that wrestlers and swimmers can get, yeah.
My God. And he just seems like he loves his wife. He just seems like a super nice guy.
But he's also got that little bad side to him with those tattoos that kind of get you curious as to what kind of, you know. He's got that cute innocence, but he looks like he could be some fun.
He's leaving with 5 Olympic gold medals.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm in love with what the U.S. track and field people wear.
What is that?
Oh, it's a ribbed onesie is what the men are wearing.
Oh, I thought it was
runners?
Funny looking.
Yeah, the runners. Oh, I love it, Julia. Yeah, I think they have the ribbing in there to try and...
What is the ribbing for? Because I saw it.
So that you can't notice all the curves and bulges and knots and knobs in your pants. That's why I think they have the ribbing.
Oh, you're hysterical.
Because the rowers now, like the rowers, they wear loose pants at the medal ceremonies ever since London 2012. When the gold medal guys went viral for, because their pants are damp.
Right?
And they had a little bit of a line. Well, there's quite a bit of...
quite a bit of man nubbin going on there.
Holy cow! Wow, I can see that through the camera right now. It's pretty prominent.
Yeah.
Good for them.
So they wear loose pants now. People were in love with Tom Daley, the British swimmer, who brought his knitting needles and he sits on the sidelines and he's knitting little Olympic gold things or just medals, little pouches. It's something Alexis would do a project down in Dirty.
Totally, Lori.
So he's knitting them and he did that one, of course, in British.
Calm the nerves.
And then any of the British teammates who win a medal, he will give them their little knitting booty to put it in. You don't want that thing to get banged
up. So you guys are sick of the volleyball.
Well, it's just on every second. Yeah. I loved the Italian, the guy, my goodness.
Fastest man in the world.
The fastest man in the world.
The new fastest,
Usain Bolt's, what is he?
He's the heir to Usain Bolt. But you know, it's crazy. He was raised in Italy, but born in Texas.
Yeah.
And the guy that took second from the United States was also from Texas. But this other young man from Italy who became, and it's the first gold medal for Italy in track, I think, ever. Maybe?
Yeah. He's the world's fastest man, and he went ahead of Fred Curley for the U.S. to do silver. It was a very exciting race.
I saw it.
The Italian high jumper who shared his gold with the guy from Qatar.
Yes.
They leapt into each other's arms. Because he kind of came out of nowhere, is what people were saying.
Well, they were
9.8 seconds. And he beat, but I think Fred Curley is maybe a better, I don't know, he just looked so strong, but he took second and the Italian, and he was so excited, and the Qatar and Italian guy, the high jump, can we share gold medals?
What a moment. That's,
they tied and they were going to have to do a jump off, and they both said, just looked at each other and said,
What about?
They did. I think they kept going for a while at 7 feet 10 inches was the height, and they couldn't both beat it. So they were just like, let's just call it together.
And it's allowed in the rules to share a gold medal, which who knew that?
Yeah, I love it. And these two know each other because, of course, these competitions, I suppose, for world and stuff, it's a small group of people that are in the actual high jump. And then I love watching that. Is it called steeple?
What's that?
When they run over the hurdles?
Yeah, I think
that's incredible to me.
Yeah. There was a girl from the United States that won, I think, that, and she broke a world record, too, I think, in the process, maybe, I believe.
That might be on tonight.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. I don't know. It's hard to know. It's
so hard.
It's confusing.
I would say it is confusing because
one of my favorite...
Did Bruce Springsteen's daughter and the equestrian do anything?
I don't know when the equestrian is, Julia. Well, I don't know if she competes in dressage. I think that might have happened. They give that very little airtime.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that? They reserve everything for volleyball and then gymnastics, swimming, and you know, you see highlights. You can watch. Neil Justin had a blistering article about how NBC has screwed the pooch on the Olympics with their coverage.
What'd he say?
Just like, you know, Hoda lost all credibility when she's sitting down with the gymnasts and telling them that she all loved them all. And Savannah going on and on about, you know, just fake stuff. It has felt faked and forced a little bit. And he was just like, you know, come on. You knew that it was going to be like this.
Yeah.
Not... Anyway, I quite liked it. I was laughing when I got off. All right, we got to go.